Hello, hello. This is a bonus IDSG episode, a chat I had with my good friend Daniel of the I Don't Speak German podcast. They've been kind enough to let me post it on my feed too, so enjoy.
All right, and welcome to I Don't Speak German. This is a public bonus. I apologize for the lack of content lately. Jack is having some health issues at the moment, so he is not going to be joining us today. Instead, we have returning friend of the pod, Ina, from Polite Conversations and Woking Up and various other episodes we've done here. Ina, say hello.
Hello. How's it going?
It's going well. I think it's going well. You know, we're having, you know, it's a Tuesday, you know, but, you know, fun times. Anyway, we are here to have a polite conversation, really, about something that sort of came up after one of Ina's recent podcast episodes. And I guess the best way to get into this is to just let her sort of, I mean, we've kind of pre-discussed this, so it's going to be obvious that this is not our first time through these topics. I think it's worth having in public. So Ina, why don't you kind of tell the audience what you told Jack and I the other day?
It came up after mine and Jack's last Twitter space. I think we did a space titled Dystopian Propaganda about the types of propaganda that supporters of Israel have been putting out, the horrific memes and TikTok videos, and just like carrying out very genocidal, like even IDF soldiers themselves are uploading TikToks, you know, and sometimes they have like people in the background that are handcuffed and gagged, and it's horrific. So yeah, we had a good Twitter space about that, but I got some messages afterwards and I brought them up to you, and that's how this conversation came up.
Right. And in particular, it's interesting to me because people asked you about content on our podcast and didn't bring this to either Jack or myself, at least that I know of. I mean, maybe somebody Twitter DM'd me and I just didn't check it or didn't see it or whatever. But I guess, I mean, it may be in the title here, but go ahead and express what people were saying to you.
So, you know, I don't want it to sound harsh or anything like that, but I only bring it up because I got like 5 or 6 messages. And basically people were asking me that since we're all friends and pretty good friends, you know, we talk to each other all the time. And since you guys have made a comeback and recently started putting out content, they were just kind of like, oh, you know, what's up with our favorite anti-fascist podcast? Not really taking the opportunity to discuss what's happening with the fascism in Israel lately. And that's what it was about. And then you and I discussed it, and you expressed some things to me. One thing that you said was interesting. And you talked about how, because you follow and keep track of a bunch of Nazis, basically a lot of what you would say could be used by them. Something like that. Am I getting that right?
Well, sure. That's part of it. I mean, just to take a step back on that, you know, the reason, you know, there are a lot of like major news stories that we don't cover. Like, we didn't cover the Russia's invasion of Ukraine. We never did an episode on that. We don't really cover, like, I don't speak German to be a show about, you know, what's in the news or what's going on, even horrific things in the news. We also have just because of what my expertise is, we have pretty relentlessly U.S. focus. And so we don't really cover a lot of like fascist movements in like Germany or Italy or, you know, Russia
or
Ukraine or whatever. Just because it's very easy to, it's very easy for me to like step on somebody's toes doing that. And by like saying something that's like just childishly wrong about like internal UK politics or whatever, because I don't follow it. And so anything that I would say in that regard would be like a very high level. And I don't think, you know, this very abstract high level and not what I think people would want to come to this podcast for. And so, like, honestly, it surprised me that people, like, thought that, like, that would be something we would do. It's not that I don't have opinions about that. It's not that I haven't been clear in terms of my social media posting. I think I've been very, very, I think Jack and I have both been very clear about, how strongly we feel on this issue. We are absolutely pro Palestine. We are absolutely against the atrocities being committed by the Israeli state. To my mind, it was just like, well, I've been so obvious about this, and, you know, everyone in my, you know, almost everybody, almost to a person, everyone in my orbit is very much on top of this issue, on that same side, that it almost felt like it would be like a, I don't want to say clickbaity, but it would almost be like, you know, yes, we know, obviously you're pro-Palestine. And I didn't have any like particular expertise to add to that without going into some really unsavory bits, which we might talk about in a minute. That was kind of like, it just kind of never, it never occurred to me that people would expect that, would want that from me. And maybe that's just me misunderstanding the audience, or maybe that's me misunderstanding the podcast, or misunderstanding the moment.
So I think, like, and this is not like in any depth, like people didn't really go beyond, oh, you know, do you know what's up with them not covering it? That's about it. But what I think is, especially because I put out this episode titled "The Silence of Left Content Creators" or something like that, around New Year's Eve, and I wasn't even thinking about you guys at the time. I was more referring to the largest left tubers and conspiracy theory type podcasts and things where, you know, they could use their platform to address this, right, because it would fall within their wheelhouse. And I think that people just see that this, what my general message was, maybe they thought that I'm talking about you guys as well.
I mean, I listened to that episode and I felt chastened. Honestly, I was like,
did you?
Yeah. I mean, I did. I was like, you're right. I should be talking about this more.
So that's what I'm going to say. I wasn't specifically talking about you. I had a few people in mind, but it's a general message that I do think that should apply broadly. So it's not like I'm saying it doesn't apply to my friends or something like that. I just think that rather than being like, oh, this isn't part of our brand, I feel like because this is such an unprecedented kind of new type of AI-assisted mass slaughter documented on live on social media and TikTok, I feel like every left content creator with any kind of platform, especially if they care about pushing back against fascism, and this is also very US related,
right,
I think we should all be using our platforms to talk about it at least a little bit, you know? I don't mean to chasten you or yell at you, or I was just bringing it up as a friend that, oh, you know, I heard like from four or five people, like, what's up with that? And then you suggested that you wanted to talk about it publicly, just to make clear to the audience.
No,
I'm not
here under duress. No,
and
no,
be I'm... questioned on air by me, Daniel Harper.
Right. Well, and you know, I get to edit this, so I can take out any stuff that makes you look bad anyway. But I guess Jason might be like a little bit too. I mean, I felt like, oh, you're, you know, well, A, when the war, I hate using that term, when the ethnic cleansing genocide, when this thing started up in October, we were not back then. We were not podcasting at that point. And honestly, I had to like take a break from social media just because it was relentless. And I was dealing, I had some health issues. I got COVID in November. I just sort of had to kind of turn away from some of that for a little while. Which is not something I'm proud of, obviously. Obviously, the people in Gaza are suffering from it, regardless of, you know, whether I'm paying attention or not. And the least I could do is kind of know what's going on. But I did find it like almost unbearable.
Yeah, I can understand that.
The misinformation like was so pervasive. I mean, I guess we can talk about this. The misinformation is so pervasive that even like more reputable sources, you know, we're kind of going back and forth on some issues.
The president of the United States was spreading.
Well, straight I mean, up lies. I'm talking about like some of the like OSINT researchers talking about, well, was that hospital bombed by a Palestinian rocket, or was it an Israeli rocket? You know, do the Palestinians have the capability of doing that? Does it have to be an Israeli, you know? And there were arguments both ways on that, you know, from people that I, you know, at least had no reason not to respect. And so it's very difficult to come in as an outsider who doesn't have any kind of expertise on that and say, well, this is what I think happened, you know?
Well, no. So that you're talking about something specific, I believe, the Al-Ahli bombing, right? Yes, so yeah. Aside from that, there's a very generic thing that is happening that is very unjust. I think anyone can comment on that, right? Knowing the specifics of what happened in Al-Ahli, which I believe is still contested. Like, it hasn't been completely debunked either way. If you look up that particular bombing, like, there's too many confusing things about it and different reports, conflicting reports. There were Israeli officials that took credit for it and then deleted it. And Israel released, obviously, edited, fake audio where the Arabic dialect didn't sound natural. And it was like edited together weirdly. And they're like admitting really ridiculous, cartoony sounding things like, oh, well, we did this, or, you know, like, so it's been really shady throughout because. I mean, Israel has an industry of muddying the water on the most obvious things that they're doing, right? They will kill people right in front of us and be like, well, no, we didn't do that.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I mean, just you touched on this a minute ago, but like getting into this particular conversation then starts because Nazis listen to me and because like, it becomes very easy to say, well, even Daniel admits that Jews are doing bad things here, you know, and not where my point would be the Israeli state, the right-wing authoritarian Israeli military state is doing horrific things and not the Jews are doing horrible things.
We have to be very careful to separate Zionists from the Jews, right? Or Israeli state from the Jews.
You know, I mean, there are people who can be described as like Zion broadly, like lowercase z Zionist, I guess, who believe in like the existence of Israel, who believe that the existence of Israel is a broadly good thing, who don't support the, you know,
actions, the current Israeli state.
Exactly. And I think that a lot of people find themselves, at least a lot of, sort of diaspora people, Jewish diaspora people, find themselves in that position very often. I mean, at least in, you know, again, I am not, again, this is me over my skis a little bit. So I'm not saying like definitive things here, but you will see when well-educated people who have some connection to Israel, either by family or by religion or whatever, do have conflicted feelings about like, you know, yes, it's nice that there's a homeland for Jewish people, but boy, this is a really shitty homeland for Jewish people, right? And I think that's so. I don't even like to use the word Zionist in that context. I specifically blame, you know, the bloodthirsty individuals who are committing atrocities, whether at the executive level or at the ground level. And to be clear,
right? But like, you have to acknowledge there's a movement much in support that is not just the specific people uttering the bloodthirsty phrases or whatever. I understand your hesitance to use the word Zionism because there are plenty of people that use the word Zionism as a cover for their anti-Semitism. However, I think in this particular climate, it has both both been used by people who are anti-Semitic, but also been more clearly separated than ever that I've seen before, because there are so many vocal anti-Zionist Jewish groups. There are so many people educating and talking about that, like at a level that we just haven't seen before.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think that particularly since October 7th and in the you know, 6 months or so since then, we have seen a very broad we are seeing, I think you're right. I think there is more of a differentiation. I think there is more, you know, as the Israeli state is committing these atrocities and as they are more and more blatant about it, it does make it easier for people to differentiate themselves from that, like to actually mm-hmm. shove it away. And I think that's right. Again, I draw a parallel between the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq back in 2002-2003. I lived in Alabama at the time, and I can tell you, like, almost everybody, you know, in my like immediate surroundings, almost everybody I knew was very bloodthirsty in terms of, you know, wanting to go in and kill you know, glass Afghanistan, you know. And not like dedicated to Osama bin Laden himself, but like, no, that entire country just needs to burn, you know?
Oh, believe me, I've heard those sentiments directed at me personally.
I'm sure you have. I never believed that then, right? I was very anti, you know, invasion of Iraq, Afghanistan. I was in my 20s at the time, so, you know, but, you know, I draw a parallel between that and what's going on in Israel. I draw like a very like straight line there. The technology is different, of course, and that makes a difference. And I do want to discuss that with you because I think that's a good place for this to go. But, you know, you saw that the same dissembling, you saw the same lies, you saw the same things being done, the things that George W. Bush and the administration around him was doing to justify this war and to justify the treatment of prisoners at Guantanamo Bay, you know, the Abu Ghraib scandal, et cetera, et cetera. I can, and the people around me who are supporting all those things, you know, I think of them very much like the Israeli citizens who are, you know, trying to prevent aid food trucks from entering Gaza, et cetera. You know,
it's not quite the same, even though there are, of course, parallels with all kinds of wars and rhetoric and hate and bloodthirst. I would just say that it's important to recognize how unique and uniquely horrific this is, because it is unprecedented in a lot of ways. I have some things that I was collecting for another episode. So I'm just going to read just some statistics and things, like just so that we can understand how unprecedented this is. So just by October 30th, this is not even a full month in, Save the Children reported that more children had died in just 3 weeks in Gaza than in the entire sum of conflicts around the world in the past 4 years. By only October 13th, which is only a few days in, the Palestinian Health Ministry noted that 20 entire surnames had been removed from Gaza's civil registry. And just as a comparison, in the Vietnam War, 63 journalists were killed in about two decades. In World War II, 69 were killed. But currently, which is only 6 months into it, we've seen, what, like around 110 journalists by January, and 48 media facilities have been destroyed. Even before October 7th, you know, Israel consistently targeted journalists. They go like that Shireen Abu al-Akleh, I hope I'm pronouncing her name right, but they shot her while she was clearly marked in her press gear. And then they were like beating the pallbearers at her funeral. This was before October 7th. They targeted in 2021, like the Associated Press and Al Jazeera offices. Like the impunity with which they operate is completely unmatched. The types of conflicts that we have seen in the past, this is unprecedented in comparison to those. That's why this is, you know, brought to the ICJ. So I would just say that while we make those comparisons, we have to also recognize that this is a population that has been living in this apartheid, extremely oppressive situation. This is a population that is kind of trapped on all sides. Their daily movements have been monitored in a way that most other populations, even if oppressed, are not. Their ingredients, their diets, their calories are counted by Israel before all of this. So like shooting at them, bombing them in this incredibly dense area, it's not just like a regular war. This is a trapped population crowded into a concentrated area of camps. And then you're just like bombing them and shooting them.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with that, of course. Yeah, I mean, I was trying to kind of draw the parallel, obviously, what's going on for, I mean, you know, I hesitated. I did not call this a war earlier. This isn't a war. This is a very one-sided slaughter is what this is.
Yeah.
And it's justified by, you know, by the activity, by Hamas. You know, Hamas committed atrocities. And then the Israeli state goes in and like says, okay, well, we're just going to do 10 times worse. We're going to do 100 times worse. You know, this does feel like an elimination. This is an attempted elimination, whether, you know, by one means or another. And that's, it's horrifying. It's horrifying for me to even sit here and try to think about a response to it, because I feel absolutely powerless to do anything except just say those words out loud over and over again.
And Abu Ghraib was such a scandal when those photos were leaked, right?
Right. No, absolutely. I mean, it was
these types of photos are leaked like hundreds per hour now.
Right. I mean, A, the technology makes things different. And B, I mean, the Abu Ghraib photos were a scandal. But again, there were plenty of people who were like, no, you know, kill them all. You know, it's fine. These are terrorists that, you know, they just had a bad night, whatever, you know. I'm not trying to disagree with you on the kind of unique nature of this conflict or of Israel's actions here. The thing that I want to come back to something that you mentioned earlier is that like this didn't start on October 7th. This has been like a decades long occupation. And an apartheid system that has left these people in like the absolute most destitute situation of near starvation. And that's just been the lifestyle of people in Gaza and the West Bank to a lesser extent. But it is this like overt military occupation of these people. And it's arguably the worst human rights abuse in the last since World War II. There's just no comparison to anything else. For me, trying to draw the broad parallels is to kind of give you a sense of where I'm thinking about it and where I'm and how I understand these things, as opposed to trying to like draw some kind of moral or some logistical equivalence. It's just trying to kind of get it straight as to like how I think about these matters and how I think about the people. I think about the Israelis committing atrocities now and the sort of the broad social support for it in the same way that I think about the Americans supporting atrocities during the Iraq and Afghanistan wars.
It's the Americans also supporting this.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Right? Absolutely. You know, and plenty of, I mean, ironically, it's like, you know, Americans, I think in polling, certainly Democrats and independents are very they have turned on Biden to a great sense here.
Yes, I don't think it's the American people. It's the American.
It's the American power. It's the American, you know, military industrial complex, the American security state. You know, anytime, I mean, on one of my live streams that I did for my Patreon, we got to talking about this a little bit. I did release that audio for the Patreon listeners, and so hopefully people have heard that. And we did start talking about this, and you know, it is just like, I feel like one of the like mental hurdles that people get into is thinking about like Israel and the United States as like discrete things, right? It's like, there is this thing called Germany. There is a thing called the United Kingdom, and it has like needs and wants. And to think of like the health of that thing as in some way indicative of the health of the health and the well-being of the people within it. And it is just this poison of nationalism. It is this poison of, you know, thinking on the state level, as opposed to thinking on the, you know, on the population level, on what are the lives of the actual people, you know, what's really being harmed here. I think that, you know, when we say, you know, the US is doing this or Israel is doing that, I mean, I know that like high level, we think, well, we're talking about policymakers. We're talking about like sort of, we're looking at it on that level, but it does get very, very dangerous thinking about these matters without considering, again, those very real human values lower down. And that's not on point to anything that you were pointing out. It's just something that I think about a lot when I start thinking about like why it's difficult to talk about these issues. Whenever you start talking geopolitics, whenever you start talking like geostrategy, everything gets simplified into this, like, you know, the great bear Russia and the eagle United States, et cetera. And it's just, I always find it very, very alienating. That's like kind of off topic, but something that I did just
alienating.
Kind of throw in.
Alienating how? You feel like you can't connect?
I feel like it becomes, it's like, because you're thinking about issues in a, it's abstracted is more the term that I'm thinking of. You know, it's alienating to me because suddenly I'm not thinking about, you know, kind of real world issues. And I'm thinking about like some kind of like grand chess game that's being played between these, you know, powers, you know, moving things on a board, you know, sort of thing.
Yes. I feel like that was more possible in wars in the past, right? But right. Certainly not, or even wars that don't get coverage now. But this particular slaughter, it is live streamed 24/7. It's hard to think of it as abstract, you know, when you're seeing their pain in such high def constantly. And it's horrific in a way that I feel like we just haven't seen yet. And this may be the new norm. I don't know. I hope not. But like, you know, tech and murder is a very horrific combination. And the reports coming out of Israel using all kinds of AI to generate human targets firstly, and then generate like building targets. And then they're saying that they use this AI system called Where's Daddy to basically anyone that they suspected of being even a low-level Hamas fighter or member. And we all know what their bar for considering someone Hamas is. It's basically a fighting age male. Like, there's not really any proof or anything like that. So it's this Where's Daddy system was used to target these whatever Hamas targets when they're at home with their families, because it's just easier to just bring down the house around their whole family. And that completely tracks with reports of like entire family surnames being removed from the civil registry, right? Like, this, when so many families were sheltering together, they just murder them all in one, with one press of a button. It's like a new level of industrialized, mechanized killing
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, just I think the most heartbreaking, you know, the most heartbreaking acronym or the most phrase that I've heard coming from this has been the wounded child, no surviving family cases. Where, you know, there's a 4-year-old who is in a hospital with a gunshot wound from shrapnel or whatever. And the entire rest of the family is just dead. You know, it's just, you know, and the idea that that happens is awful. The idea that it happens often enough that it has its own like clever acronym, you know, like that's just, I mean, it's absurd. We live in the very darkest timeline, you know. It's, sorry, I laugh at it because it's just like,
yeah. What else can
I don't think this is funny at all. I'm trying to find like, yeah, you know, I use the word absurd to describe it. I mean, the idea that, you know, the idea that like young Israeli soldiers are going into the homes of people they've massacred and are like playing with the, like the frilly lingerie of people in Gaza. And they're like,
repeatedly,
yeah, over and over and over again. Like this is something out of a Paul Verhoeven script. You know, like this seems like it should be in Starship Troopers or RoboCop or something. You know, it's just so over the top.
And it's cartoonishly evil.
Right. It is. And it's just like, look, you've seen, this is what people do in war. This is what young men have done in war. There are stories about this from Afghanistan and Iraq. There are stories about this from Vietnam. Now we have TikTok for it. Right. And now we have, you know, Twitter spaces or, you know, we have the videos, we have all this stuff. And I think, it is legitimately fascinating. And this might be, you know, something that I can speak to a little bit is that, you know, I have spent a lot of time studying, you know, certainly English language propaganda in terms of like far right propaganda, obviously, in terms of trying to understand how Nazis spread their ideas and how these things get like promulgated into three times on that one, into the mainstream, something that I'm obviously very, very interested in. And you do see a lot of the actual techniques are different because they're not pushing ideology as much, but the idea of like the dehumanization of the Palestinian people, using the frilly dresses and stuff, like, which I don't like. That's, I mean, it's just like, is that, are you calling these women the sluts because they have frilly lingerie? I mean, you know, is that
in their own the homes? Point?
Yeah, in their own home. Like, you know, it's like, you know, it's just a humiliation ritual. It's just that.
Yes, that's like, exactly what it is.
The Pallywood stuff, you know, the idea that like, oh, these poor little Palestinians, it's just a stage. They're just faking it just because, you know, and that's exactly what the Nazis said about the Jews in the 1930s and 1940s. And that's exactly what like the neo-Nazis that I follow around, you know, say about Jews today. Like it's the exact same pattern, you know. I mean, it's atrocious. It's awful. It's hard for me to even describe like how awful I find this. It's just
what's especially atrocious is that we've seen this all before. We've condemned it. We've said never again, and now it's happening. And yeah. So many people are just willing to turn away, willing to say the opposite of what is plainly happening before their eyes, you know? And then when they like go out of their way to condemn Russia for using food as a weapon of war, for grabbing land, and then turn around and just simply excuse Israel for doing the same thing. Oh, we're concerned if it's actually happening, that's concerning, but that's like it. They're like handing them weapons.
Yeah, I mean, it's like big old Uncle Joe. He's just you know, wagging his finger at Netanyahu while the money just continues to, you know, flow in from the back end. You know,
it's yes.
Like, I live in a swing state. I did not even vote in the primary. I mean, Joe Biden was going to win the primary regardless. I very well may not vote in the. I won't. Uh-huh. I obviously am not going to vote for Trump. But like, I'm sorry. It's just. lesser evil and all that, but like this is a pretty bad lesser evil in my opinion. And it's
I mean, look, for the first time, I can understand that position. I have never really been too thrilled about that position because I'm like, no, you can't let the right win. But now I'm like, in this situation, even though if I were American, I would probably very, very, very reluctantly vote for Biden. I cannot for a second blame anyone for not wanting to vote for someone like that.
Again, it's well known. I live in Michigan. Dearborn, Michigan has the largest per capita Arab population in the United States. He's lost Michigan. Like Dearborn was going to vote for him by like 9-1. And we're going to get 4 more years of Trump based on this, Biden. Like, thanks a lot, buddy. I appreciate that. Like, it's just, I mean, again, not that that's the thing we should be focusing on or anything, but it is just like, it's such an unforced error. It's just like, how can you fuck up this badly? And it is just like, you know, it is just the geopolitics of it. It is like, well, we support Israel because we need it for, you know, various geostrategic reasons. And therefore, whatever they're doing is like, you know, and we'll say things
in public. But to what extent? I mean, America is really becoming ridiculous now in that, because it doesn't seem to be benefiting from doing this for Israel. I feel like it's making the entire world a lot less safe with the dismantling of the international laws. And they're just willing to send this message to all the worst people in the world that it doesn't matter. It does not matter what you do. Like, if Israel is not going to abide by international humanitarian law, then why should, you know, someone awful in another country be like, well, why should I? And they don't seem to be thinking that far ahead.
The only thing I can imagine is they're just thinking like, well, this is all going to blow over in a year or two anyway, and now everybody's going to forget, which, you know.
I don't know. Israel is bombing other countries now. Oh, yeah. So,
absolutely. I mean, the U.S. just does, the U.S. bombs who it wants to bomb, and Israel gets special dispensation because of the special working relationship, et cetera, et cetera. It's just, the US and Israel can do whatever they want, and everybody else just has to suck on it. That's just been US foreign policy for the last 50 years. Like,
you know? You can only get by with that for so long before people really start losing their shit. And everyone that the U.S. doesn't like is a terrorist, and whoever the U.S. does like is a good child of light.
Do you think that I answered like kind of the questions that the people who brought to you? Do you think we've answered that sufficiently, or do you think there's more that we should go into?
I mean, as I told you, it was a very vague and superficial like level question. I don't want to drag other people.
Sure. Yeah.
I just got after our space, I feel like people were like, huh, so they're doing a space. Jack is doing a space on this. So how come, you know, and then why aren't they talking about it on their platform? So I guess you are talking about it now on your platform. And for that, I think, you know, that's great. And it's been clear to me that, you know, it's not like you're trying to deny what's happening or anything like that. So I guess, you've answered right. that question, but I guess your response was that you felt it didn't work with your brand, or.
That sounds really vile, right? To say, well, the brand of the podcast is not, it's just not what we cover, I think is kind of more what and if I were going to, again, there are lots of news stories. We're not like a topical news podcast. If we were a topical news podcast, that would be a very different thing. I think where I would land on that is like when I'm prepping an I Don't Speak German episode, it's like I need a structure. I need like a beginning, middle, and end. In order to like sort of have this is just a conversation. So I didn't prep this at all, except just, you know, Ina and I chatted the other day. But when I'm prepping it, I'm like, well, I can't, you know, we can talk about Gaza, we could talk about this, but I need an angle, I need an end, I need like a way to talk about it that makes sense for what I think an I Don't Speak German episode should be. And that's a tougher nut to crack in terms of, I mean, I could have brought on a guest who had expertise in it. You know, I could have brought on someone, I could have found a Palestinian activist. I mean, there are certainly plenty of them in. And maybe that was the thing to do. Maybe that would have been just the way to do it, is to just bring on an expert, you know, pay them for their time and say, yeah, let's talk about what's going on here. And, you know, to spread it that way, or to
try to get support that way. You don't necessarily have to pay your podcast guests.
I mean, I would feel like if I'm taking someone who with real expertise away from like doing other more important work than talking to me, I would, I would try to at least give them some kind of honorarium for it, you know, particularly since, you know, I do make money off of the Patreon, et cetera, et cetera. I would consider that important just for my own, you know, mm-hmm. sense of fairness there, especially if I was bringing them on specifically because I didn't have like a particular bit of expertise and didn't have like a way of talking about it.
I feel like maybe you're overthinking it, because there's lots of ways to talk about it. Like, firstly, you know, we both cover like the IDW sphere and the heterodox swamp. There's plenty of takes to talk about in that. Just Barry Weiss alone has been horrifying.
Well, you've been doing a great job on Sam Harris. I don't want to step on those toes either.
Right. I'll take care of the Harris part.
Yeah. Barry Weiss has done like a multi-part like series where it's just like listening to the voices of Israel and the soldiers who like how they suffer in this conflict. It's like, Jesus Christ, Barry. Yeah, it's disgusting. It's just the complete lack of balance. Not even an attempt to like say, and yes, well, of course we know there are atrocities. It's just like no, we don't even talk about that. It's just look at how much the Israeli people are suffering. Look at the people. Look at this, and we don't look at the rest of it, because the rest of it is just, you know, there. I think this is something I was trying to get at earlier. It is like, we don't think about, like, in our, like, polite liberal democracies, we don't think about the actions of the state as being violent in the same way that we think about, like, other types of violence. So when Hamas fighters come and massacre a bunch of people, well, that's a terrorist attack, because those people, you know, they're irregular fighting force. Those are just people committing atrocities, you know? But when the Israeli forces go and start like carpet bombing Gaza, that's the rational response. That's the response.
Or snipering 5-year-olds.
Or snipering 5-year-olds. Yeah, that is just maybe that one sniper, he was having a bad day. Maybe that guy needs to be, you know. But like the actions of the state, well, of course, Israel has to protect itself, you know? And this is the same logic. This is the same logic that we see in all. And I mean, the one that's my particular hobby horse is the U.S. prison system. You know, it's like, well, the U.S. prison system isn't committing violence. These people committed crimes. And so they need to be locked up. They need to be, you know, police just need to have these powers. And it's just like, there's this blindness to that. And I think that it just comes from like seeing the state as like this,
It's official,
right? It's like, this is the thing that we're allowed to do, right? And so you can never like question that system. You can only question the activities of like individuals within it, right? You know, and again, I think that connects to like, this didn't start on October 7th. This started 70 years ago. It started, you know, the process of depopulation, the process of ethnic cleansing, started with the creation of Israel in 1948. Like it's all, you know, it is a straight line from one to the other.
And you're talking about prison, right?
Right.
Israel is basically the only country that uses like military law for minors, to prosecute minors.
Yeah, I believe it.
There's no convictions, there's no proof. I mean, not no convictions. There's no like real charges other than like stone throwing a lot of times, and for that people get like decades. And then there's like intentional medical neglect. You're hearing those reports from the doctors, Israeli doctors currently talking about just how vile the conditions in those detainment camps are, where prisoners who have not been convicted of anything, who have not gone through trial, are just kept and tortured. They're handcuffed and they're having to squat handcuffed for weeks in diapers. They're being fed through straws and they're having amputations as a result of handcuff injuries and just being in that one position. It's like very common for them to have amputations just because of the mistreatment. Like, how is this country recognized as not only a democracy, but the only democracy in the Middle East? I mean, this has been what's been so disorienting for me, and I have brought this up a few times, is that growing up in Saudi Arabia, you think, especially as someone who's critical of it, you think, wow, this is a very oppressive country, and Jesus, it can't get worse than this. Afghanistan, Iran, sure, but like that is the pinnacle of awfulness. But then when you hear the levels of just horrendous control in Israel, it goes beyond that. Like, Saudi Arabia was oppressive as fuck. There was literal morality police on the streets. But there was no, like, only a certain race can walk on this street. You know what I mean? Right. There was gender segregation, certainly. There was also segregation generally. It wasn't like an official segregation, but like they keep the Saudi population away from the non-Saudi population. So like we have different schools. Like they don't, basically the mentality was, we don't want our pure Saudi population infected with these like Western ideas or whatever. So like the expats in Saudi Arabia had compounds, different schools. Life was pretty normal within the compounds because Saudi law did not apply in there. There was no morality police. We had like swimming pools where we would just swim like in regular swimsuits and not like a giant religious swimsuit. So like it was different from life outside the walls of the compound. So that is a kind of segregation. These things existed. The mistreatment of migrants existed. But the way that Palestinians are mistreated, like they control whether they can fish, they control whether they can collect rainwater, they control how many calories are available per Palestinian, they control if they can have chocolate or cilantro. None of this existed. You know what I'm saying? Right, yeah.
No, sorry, I was laughing at the cilantro. It's like, you know.
It's so arbitrary. It's so random.
Right, yeah. The bullshit artists, you know, the Sam Harris's, the Barry Weiss's, you know, are going to say, well, you know, if the Palestinians wanted those things, they could just like, you know, they're responsible for building it themselves. I guess it's more like a Ben Shapiro.
They're not getting building permits or materials.
Well, they don't get the materials. Like, you know, the old Ben Shapiro line is like, you know, Arabs like to live in sewage or whatever yeah. the line was, yeah. you know, it's like, well, the reason that there's sewage in the streets in Gaza is not because like the Gazans just like that. It's because yeah. there's no infrastructure and because 2 million people are living in like poverty conditions in these, in this horrifying police state, in this open air prison. Yeah, of course there's like horrible living conditions. You're like, you know, and this is on this is on Israel to solve this problem.
You know? Yes. Like, if you are surrounding them and trapping them in this area, then that is on you. Don't say there's no occupation when you're literally controlling where they go, when they go, what they eat, how they eat, what they build, what they wear. I mean, they have streets where doors are welded shut. Their front doors are welded shut because they are not allowed to exit their houses on that side because that street is just for Jewish people.
Yeah. I mean, again, to talk about this, it's cartoonishly bad. It's cartoonishly evil. You know, and it is exactly the activities of a settler colonial state in the 21st century with the technology to do those sorts of things. I mean, it's just, yeah, I mean, it's vile. It's vile stuff. And I don't know. I don't have another response to it other than that. It's just, it's horrifying.
And the inversion of the narrative, how actually it's the Palestinians that are genocidal. How right. pointing out any war crime that Israel does is anti-Semitism.
or like Palestinian liberation organizations, like From the River to the Sea. Well, that's genocidal because it implies that the Jewish people will not have their own independent state for themselves. And so like the destruction of the state, of the governing apparatus, is a genocide against the Jewish people, which is, again, absolutely, you know, wrong. And the rhetorical trick that all of these people pull is like, well, if you want the Palestinians and the Jews, or if you want the
but
Palestinians,
but that's not even necessarily what River to the Sea means. It's just, they're just, people are just saying Palestine will be free. It doesn't mean destroy the governing apparatus even necessarily.
Right. Right. I mean, you know, kind of my thought is like what they're arguing, or what's sort of behind that is saying that like, well, look, the Israel is just for Jews, that only Jews get to be citizens here, only, and they get special privileges. And to remove those special privileges would effectively be to change Israel as a one ethnicity state. It would change that, and therefore it is like a destruction of the Jews over again, even if it harms no actual individual Jewish person, right? And I mean, you know, like, again, I'm not well enough educated on the internal dynamics of the Israeli, you know, constitution or whatever to be able to comment intelligently on like what exactly the laws would have to change in order to like. But it's just like there's just no answer to this that doesn't involve like the Palestinians had to be given full rights in Israel. That's just the bottom line. Like you just can't
if you want
do this,
long
right?
lasting you know? Peace, it's so obvious that is like the basic step that needs to be taken. Like, how do you treat humans like animals for decades and then expect them to never be radicalized or filled with rage?
Right. And I mean, and the answer to that is, well, you know, if you starve them out long enough, they're just not going to be there anymore. Like that's the answer, you know? And it's hard to say. I guess I'm more familiar with genocidal rhetoric than like most people in the world. And like, it's just openly genocidal rhetoric, you know?
They had a conference. They had a resettlement conference where they're taking back Gaza, and it was attended by one third roughly of the Knesset. So like one third of their official government like attended this ethnic cleansing conference. You can't even say some extremists did it like out in the boonies where nobody knew. No, government members were participating.
Yeah. Absolutely.
In the ethnic cleansing conference. Like, the genocidal rhetoric is coming from every single level of government, of military official down to the small lower level soldiers, to the high level commanders, the prime minister, the president, Ben-Gavir, Smotrich, all of them.
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. I mean, it is just coming. It is coming from every level. It's coming from the top. It is coming from the middle. It's coming from the bottom. And it is, I mean, it is, you know, the ideology is not unique to Israel. The eliminationist rhetoric is certainly not unique to Israel.
Of course not.
Just right now, the people in charge are eliminationists, you know, in the same way. Yeah, and my country is doing everything possible to aid them in that goal. You know,
I wouldn't say that right now the people who are in charge are eliminationists. I feel like to implement that kind of project where you're trying to keep this pure ethno state, to implement, it's not just Netanyahu's far right government, right? It's across the political spectrum that it is an eliminationist genocidal ideology. There are liberal settlers that just
right.
take.
I didn't mean that in a partisan sense. I meant that in a sort of in a more broadly, geopolitical sense. So it's not like, oh, if you just vote in another guy as Prime Minister of Israel, then suddenly this is going to change, because obviously it's not going to change. Netanyahu is particularly bad, but in the same way that U.S. border policies didn't really change when Joe Biden came into office. It's like, well, exactly. We'll put softer pillows in the kitty cages, and then that'll be fine. I don't know. I don't know how to solve it. If I knew how to solve it, then believe me, I would say.
Yeah, something. Of course. I'm not expecting for us to solve it or you to solve it.
Right. And I know you're not. I mean, it's like, oh, one of the most intractable things in the world. Let's try to hash this out between us. No, it's not going to happen.
It's like Eric Weinstein saying, "Well, long form podcasting will save civilization."
No, I'm wearing a suit right now because I am a leader in waiting. I am here to take control when I am an adult in the room. When the children stop bickering, I will come in and solve this. What a fucking douchebag. Anyway, we're not going to talk about Eric Weinstein today, but
Oh, we easily could, because he's had some takes. But yeah,
I haven't even looked in on Brett. I haven't. I mean, I know. I know he said some shit, but I have not really paid too much attention to Brett in the last couple of years, and I'm sure he's had some doozies on this as well.
Last I saw was that Dave Rubin was spending a day with the IDF and walking around some hip area, talking about how there's no do you see any apartheid here? No, I don't. No. Look at this nice restaurant. And I mean, it's all of them, right? Jerry Coyne wrote about how he doesn't mean to sound harsh, but I don't think that people are starving as bad as they're making it out to be, or something probably even more cruel than the way that I'm phrasing it, but something along those lines. We all know what Sam Harris has been putting out, and it is getting more and more genocidal as the time goes on. And I am currently working on the next Woking Up, but I've had to stop a few times because I feel myself physically needing to throw up sometimes when I'm trying to write that, because for me, I'm not Palestinian. I'm not even Arab. I'm South Asian, but I am of Muslim background. And their anti-Muslim rhetoric, while there is a specific genocide happening, which uses anti-Muslim tropes to dehumanize Palestinians, it just feels like if there was a specific genocide going on that targeted me and my family, these people would be cheering it on in the same exact way. So it's very personal to me. There is a genocide going on. It's happening to people that look like me, that come from similar background as me. And I'm hearing what all these people are saying. These are the people that talk about how Islamophobia is not real and how we shouldn't let Muslims weaponize that word, because then the conservatives, this is what they used to say, conservatives will try to use that to prevent any criticism of Islam from happening. And I have seen that, sure. Conservatives of all kinds will try to protect their ideologies. So that's no surprise. And I have opposed it. But when it comes to anti-Semitism, all these same people are willing to go to the length where any criticism of Israel is immediately deemed anti-Semitism. And they just don't care. Sam Harris, who will say things like, "The Jewish people partly brought the Holocaust on themselves." Sam Harris, who will defend Stefan Molyneux and remove criticism of him from his podcast, he is willing to say that criticism of Israel is anti-Semitic right now.
Right.
And anyone coming out in support of Palestine is coming out in support of Hamas. That is an insane conflation to make in full public view.
Well, and that kind of rhetoric, I mean, you know, the neo-Nazis also benefit from that kind of rhetoric. This is exactly what they want, is, for Hamas and the Palestinians to be seen as one and the same, and for the Jews in Israel to be seen as one and the same, because it benefits their political project. And they're riding high on it. I mean, I thought about making an episode about this, about like going into this, like how the rhetoric works, but it's just can't do that right now. It's just not, it's not the time for that. That's another reason why, you know, when I was talking about like trying to prep an episode, like, oh, well, we could talk about how the rhetoric is being used. And it's just like, it's just A, it's really vile. And so it's really vile even by Nazi standards, but it's like, it's just impossible to talk about like, and not lean into certain, I don't know, like, it's just not the moment. Like it had, like the conflict has to reach another point. It's like the slaughter has to stop first before we can really like talk about that, I think.
Yeah. And it's important to center Palestinians in these conversations right now.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Not Nazis, but yeah. Right. So yeah, I think we're definitely on the same page.
And, no, agreed. Yep.
I can understand your hesitance, but I feel like maybe you overthought it at some point. Like, I feel like you could just casually talk about what you see happening. I mean, not casually, because it's pretty horrific, but without too much concern about, is this the way to frame it? Is this the right level of expertise? I think that's the trap that they want people, many people want people to get bogged into, that I'm not an expert on the Middle East. Right. I don't know everything, where the atrocities are so clear. And you can see that tone change since the 6 Western aid workers were killed, right? I think by December, I think it was reported that over 300 health workers were killed, which I believe exceeds all countries in conflict combined in any year since 2016. It's just unprecedented in so many ways. The targeting of health workers, the targeting of medical workers,
targeting the bombing of hospitals.
Reporters.
I mean,
yes.
I mean, one of the things that, like, as you know, I spent like 2 months out of work. I had surgery, and then I was like pre bed bound for like at least a month. And the first thing that I thought of when I was thinking about like the lack of running water in Gaza and in these like horrifying, atrocious conditions was even absent all the conflict, even absent all the bombing and all of the everything, had I not had running water in my home when I was convalescing, I probably would have, like, my wound would have gotten infected. I would have suffered. I could very easily have died from even a relatively minor wound.
Yeah.
That surgical wound that had to heal just without running water. Like, no other thing going on without running water and without clean bandages and without like painkillers, etc. Very easily could have died. And that, I mean, I'm sorry that, like, again, it's not about me, but that really brings it home to me in like a very visceral way. It's just like thinking about like, again, not that abstract, you know, not like the numbers, but just like, what does it mean to be injured? What does it mean to need hospital services and not have running water? Like, it's just, I mean, it's, and the idea that like they justify this by, you know, well, we warned them first. We did a roof tap. And we told him to get out in 20 minutes. And so, like,
yeah, can you imagine people who are bedbound? Yes.
I mean, you know, your pal and mine, Sam Harris, is like this is a benign move. You know, like no other military spends so much of its energy trying to protect the lives of innocents, you know, et cetera. And by, you know, like, yeah, you give people 20 minutes to get out of a fucking hospital, like, and then you say, well, they're bad if they were still there. Like, it's absurd. It's absurd.
Well,
like,
also the people who did get out and followed their instructions and where they went, where they were directed. And
then they bombed there.
Then they bombed there.
It's like, I mean, again, cartoonishly evil. It just feels like, you know, it's awful. And the fact that anybody is like openly like defending this, and the fact that like reasonable centrists, you know, like, we speak quietly and we talk in very NPR hushed tones about this and how horrible, and this is supposed to be like the way we approach this. It's supposed to be like, well, there's a conflict and we just have to, you know, maintain the rights of Israel. We have to maintain the borders and, you know, there has to be like safety for Israeli citizens. But boy, the bombing is just, it's just a lot of bombing. But like, what is the moral import of that? It's like, just shut the fuck up, Sam Harris. It's just like,
yeah,
you know, it's not just Sam, but he's the bad one. He's just like the most overt about it.
Yes.
So for like maybe like Douglas Murray has been worse, but like they're, he's in a pod, honestly.
Yeah. Douglas Murray is using terrorist justifications, like literally what Obama, but not Obama. Please edit that out.
Literally. Obama bin Laden. Yep.
No. That's what I was going to say. Literally. Literally what Osama bin Laden and the London 7/7 bombers said as their reasoning, right? Well, why did these people not overthrow their governments? They're fair game.
Yeah,
for their government's actions, you can target anyone.
Yeah, no, and that's explicit justification from Douglas Murray and others is like, well, you know, if they didn't want this to happen, they should have overthrown Hamas. And it's like, okay, well, the next time the British government does something horrifying, then you, Douglas Murray, are
like right
complicit,
now
complicit in that. Exactly. You know, like this, it's just, it's might makes right. You know, I mean, it just, it's that same logic. It's that same like, well, we do this because we are strong and you accept it because you are weak, you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, that's the whole answer. It's like, you know, well, by that logic, the activities of Hamas on October 7th, those atrocities were justified, you know, like
by that logic,
by that same logic. Exactly. I don't agree with that logic. I'm arguing against
that.
Right. But by that same logic, the massacre of civilians at a rave, absolutely justified. You know, because these are Israeli citizens, these are Jews, and they, you know, like, and so it just comes down to who has the biggest gun and who has the biggest propaganda ministry, right? You know, that's all it is.
And never mind, like, Douglas will never care or mention that majority of the population is under 18 and we're not around to vote Hamas in. So, like, they literally did not vote for that government, and yet you're blaming them for not overthrowing it.
Exactly. And like, yeah, we could go around all day on this.
Yeah. I just wanted to say that we're definitely on the same page, and I hope you did not feel too chastened by me again.
not at all. Sorry. That might be a little bit of an aggressive word, but I mean, you know, all I was saying was I listened to that and I thought like, yeah, I feel like a little bit, okay. Yeah, you're right. A lot of lefty content creators, you know, did not discuss this in detail on their platforms, and you know, I could definitely see myself being one of those, you know.
Yeah. I wasn't, to be clear again, yeah. I wasn't talking about you, but you can see why someone would think that it's important for many, if not most, lefty content creators who care about this kind of stuff to use their platforms to just kind of speak about it in any way that they can.
No, I agree with that. And certainly, I mean, I will, I guess the one thing I would say is, you know, I don't know who reached out to you. I don't know if they were like Patreon supporters of ours or, you know, kind of what the, you know, kind of what the dynamic there was. Certainly if you think I'm not covering something and you think that I should be, please reach out. Like, you can email me, you can Twitter DM me, you can, you know, you can at me, you can do, like, I'm not hard to find. And sometimes I
don't think it was like
responding. I think it's just like, yeah, I mean, I just, you know, the fact that several people said something to you was sort of a surprise to me. Because if you said,
well, surprise to me too. And that's what got me thinking about it, because otherwise I probably wouldn't have had this conversation with you. But then I was like, oh, maybe I should bring it up, because like after the first couple of messages, okay, I was like, oh, maybe I don't need to say anything. But then I got a few more and I was like, oh, maybe I should say something. So I don't think it was like a, I don't like Daniel kind of thing. It was more of a, hey, do you know what's going on? Because I'm just surprised. That's sure. All.
Yeah, no. And I understand that. Again, I'm not complaining at all. I'm not like arguing at all. I was just like, you know, I feel like I'm a pretty approachable guy. And if you have, if you think I'm not covering something I should, then, you know, let me know. that's kind of all I was trying to say, just to the audience while we're still on the air. Yeah. So it was not a criticism of anybody in particular. It's just, it just surprised me that you got several messages and I didn't get any and Jack didn't get any.
It's only because it was after our
Twitter space. Right. Yeah.
And I think you and I had a moment in that space where you were like, well, no, this kind of thing happens in war. And I was like, well, no, this is more than the usual. And I feel like maybe it was perceived as a bit of a.
Oh, like I was like, it was a little bit of a cop out on my part. Yeah, I could see that.
Not my word.
No, 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 no. Yeah. I mean, yeah, sure. I mean, no, I've tried to be self-critical. I mean, you know, you say I overthink the podcast, and a lot of times I'm overthinking it because I'm trying to be self-critical of it. And I'm trying to kind of understand what the right way to say things is and what the right way to do things is sometimes. And you're right that I can probably overthink that sometimes. And then we don't produce episodes because I'm spending more time than is necessary planning it.
I do the same. So yeah. Believe me, I spend a lot of time thinking, fuck, like, how can I condense all this garbage from Sam Harris into one episode? Because I feel like there's just always so much to say.
Yeah. Yeah. No. You know, I try to think about it, and I don't speak German again. And this is like a beginning, middle, and end. And it's like the 5-paragraph paper. That's just how I like, that's just how I organize it. Right. It's like, okay, there's an intro. There are like 3 points of evidence or 3 things we're going to talk about. And then an outro where we sum everything up, you know, mm-hmm. And I know that that's like, you know, the way you learn to write papers in the first grade or whatever. But like, that is, I think that's a really solid starting point for a podcast episode. And I know that also, mm-hmm. Because Jack and I do it together, he's always going to come in with other things from left field. He's going to come in with his responses. He's going to come in and, you know, add context or add history or whatever. And so like it helps for me to just have like a skeleton. And then he and mm-hmm. I bounce it off of each other for an hour and a half. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry. This is just talking shop at this point, but yeah, no, I'll be more mindful of that in the future. So.
Listen, we should end by congratulating each other for being able to have this amazingly
such a difficult topic, Ina.
Yeah.
I really appreciate you just being willing to have the conversation.
Right.
Have it in public. It's real. It's a real free speech issue. Mm. Like you're clearly engaging in the most high level of thought. And that's what I appreciate about you, Ina.
Yeah, and you know what? I really appreciate that we can have these differing viewpoints and still speak to each other respectfully. You know, I don't know many other people that can speak as well as us on such differing viewpoints. And, you know, we are really so intellectually honest, and I really have to congratulate us on being this excellent and rational.
We're definitely going to have a dinner party again sometime, Ina, just to sit down and just clear the air and have some more of these great conversations, you know.
You know how different we are, like, in our politics. It's truly amazing that two people from the left and the left and the more left can really get together and have these conversations.
The whole range of political opinions get expressed from the left to the far left.
And exactly.
That's how we like it. No,
mm-hmm.
Thank you so much, Ina, for being on. I cannot end this podcast any better than that. So thank you so much for being on. You're welcome back anytime. And thanks to everybody for listening. Cheers.